Welcome to Nature Finds a Way, a pop culture biology podcast where we nerd out about biology facts and fiction in some of our favorite books, movies, and TV shows.
I'm Lindsay, and she's Sarah, and we're marine biologists in recovery. This is episode 4, featuring Star Trek, The Voyage Home. And you can't see it, but Sarah's doing jazz hands because she is a Trekkie. And is laughing now.
Yay! Yeah. So, basically half the reason that I started this podcast was to make my friends watch Star Trek.
Exactly. This is the same reason we started Life Lives for Life, so that I would watch Parks and Rec.
Yeah.
Started book club so that people would read Hunger Games.
Yeah.
It's all just about coercion.
Making your friends do things. Watch things that are good.
Yep.
Excellent. So, I had seen this movie many, many times. It's probably, it's not my favorite Star Trek movie, but it's my favorite of the original, like, original series cast movies. Doesn't mean it's the best, but I like it the most.
It does play to your
It plays to my loves.
To your loves.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And also, like, I grew up in a house with, my parents are Star Trek fans also, so when you're thinking about, like, how to introduce your kids to Star Trek when they're too young for some parts of Star Trek, this one's a pretty good intro for kids. Like, there are other good Star Trek movies, but they're a little dark compared to this one.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyways. Star Trek IV came out in 1986. It was directed by Leonard Nimoy. It was written by a bunch of people, including Leonard Nimoy, Harv Bennett, Nicholas Meyer, a whole bunch of other stuff. And in addition to the, you know, usual cast of Star Trek characters, it stars Catherine Hicks as Dr. Gillian Taylor, a whale biologist at the Cetacean
Institute
in Sausalito, which is actually the Monterey Bay Aquarium in Monterey Bay.
They didn't even change the logo.
Nope, they just slapped a sign on. And yeah, like, I had not been to Monterey the first several times that I saw this movie, but I have been a couple times now, and
yep. Actually, I heard when they first walked in, the Cetacean Institute, someone said something about, I have to go feed the otters. So, that's a problem.
Yep.
Right there.
Yep.
But other than that, it looks almost exactly like Monterey Bay Aquarium looks today.
They've really redone some parts of it.
Well, yeah, as but you obviously. Do. It's been 30 years.
Well, it would have been pretty new.
Yeah, I think almost pretty new. I've never looked, but
I know it's like,
it's pretty recent.
It's pretty new. Yeah, because they learned a lot of mistakes from
other
facilities.
Mm-hmm. And now they have the best one ever. I'm not biased.
No.
I think if you pooled any people who know anything about aquariums,
it's up there.
Everyone would vote.
Yeah. It's up there. It's real good.
Yeah.
And does not have any cetaceans.
Nope. Not at all.
It has otters.
Mm-hmm.
And I think other, like, minivets?
I can't remember. I mean, they have a lot of otters. They're just on otters.
They mostly just have otters and then other awesome stuff, like a giant school of tuna sometimes.
Uh-huh. And an albatross.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry. This is not a podcast about the Monterey Bay Aquarium, but it could be. It could be.
Yep.
So when I was looking up the production history of this movie, I think the sort of premise was they wanted the crew of the Enterprise, who are not on the Enterprise for basically the whole movie, they wanted them to go back in time to save the world, I think was the premise. And so at various points in the development of this film, instead of it being going back in time to get whales, to bring them back to communicate with the probe, it was to go back to get something from the rainforest to save us from a disease.
Uh-huh.
And instead of a marine biologist played by Catherine Hicks, it was going to be a UFO specialist played by Eddie Murphy.
No!
Yeah.
That would have been a different movie.
That would have been a real bad movie.
Yes.
Yes.
So,
yeah.
Good job, them.
Good job, them. Most of the whale scenes are not real whales. They're, like, I think 4 meter long? No, 4 foot long. Animatronic things? I can't remember. They're all mostly animatronic, and except for the ones where it's like, oh, that's a stock video.
Yes. Yeah. Stock footage of a whale breaching.
Nice.
Definitely.
Nice.
Probably not also in California.
Nope. Maybe. Especially, there was some continuity issues with the scenery and the sizes of whales.
Mm-hmm. Which I find, especially scenery,
yeah,
in all whale shots, in all movies, is all
problematic. Like, at the end, when one of them breaches, that it's, like, on a background of a beautiful blue sky, and then they're swimming out under the Golden Gate Bridge.
Yep. But
if you're in the bay at San Francisco, there's no open sky.
Nope.
It's also probably cloudy.
Probably. Yeah. San Francisco.
So, anyways, Lindsay, what was your general impression of this movie? Or, like, what did you know about this movie going into it?
I knew that it was the one about the whales. That's all.
Did you know anything that there was, like, time travel?
Or... I'm pretty sure that either you or my sister explained to me that there was time travel at some point.
But,
like, when they talked about how they had to go back in time, I was like, yeah, rings a bell. Yeah. Oh, there's whales, and they filmed it at the Monterey Bay Aquarium. That was what I knew.
Excellent. And how did you feel about it now that you've seen it?
I feel that it is an excellent 80s movie.
Yes.
Because it is so
80s.
Oh, yeah. All of the computer modeling and all that stuff. But other than that, like, I don't watch a lot of Star Trek. Most Star Trek I know is either just from my pop culture experience or from seeing the new movies.
Mm-hmm.
So I know the characters, but I don't have experience with watching the old stuff. But I'm aware of the level of cheese.
Yeah.
Especially in the original series.
And I think this movie is especially higher in cheese than, say, like, Star Trek 2 and 3.
Well, because 2 is super dark, right?
2 is pretty dark.
Khan.
Yeah, Khan. And then 3, I don't watch 3 a lot because I don't like it. So I've only seen it a couple times. But yeah, it's, like, not as cheesy as this one. Star Trek 1 is, like, a drug trip. So it's, like, there's not much story. They had a lot of budget, and they used it on special effects and not writing.
In the 70s, so very special.
Yeah.
But I enjoyed it. It was an interesting storyline, and as a person, if I had been shown this when I was 8, I probably would have loved it as much as you, because it's a movie about whales.
Yeah, exactly.
Who cares about what else is going on? There's whales.
Yeah, it's whales, and there are these characters that, like, now I like, but I didn't really know them back then.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Yeah, I don't know exactly how old I would have been when I first watched it. I don't really remember first watching it, but it's probably, you know, I was probably little.
Yeah.
Yeah, under 10 for sure. Mm-hmm. Awesome. So, overall, I thought the whale biology stuff was, like, pretty decent, especially for the time.
Mm-hmm, definitely for the time. They didn't delve super deep into a lot of stuff, which makes sense because it's not about the biology of whales. It's
no.
just about whales.
Yeah.
So a lot of the stuff that they talked about was surface facts about humpback whales, and they were basically all correct.
Yeah. Size, diet, baleen. Yeah, you can get some basic, like, well, I was going to say, like, Wikipedia facts, but it was, like, Encyclopedia Britannica facts back then. Mm-hmm.
Song is a big part, obviously. Song. It's a huge part of the plot. When they do that, like, the basis of humpback whale songs, they do that correctly. Whether or not it can transmit to outer space, that's a whole other issue.
Yeah.
But basically, humpback whales, the males sing. There has been some random evidence of females singing, but we don't know why. It's not singing. It's like a thumping.
Yeah, they do, like, a really low
like pitch. Like a beat.
Yeah.
Nobody really knows why that is, and that's just new.
Yeah, like, within the last 5-10 years.
Yeah, but male singing has been known about for over almost 50 years.
Yeah.
They do it for mating, they do it to attract females, and then they also do competition singing.
Right.
There's all sorts of research, and I can put up 7,000 links about whale song and deconstructing it and how it changes every year, and how it changes different.
It, like, evolves.
It evolves through populations, but also it evolves, and it's not the same through every humpback whale population in the world, but they have similar beats, and nobody knows how that happens because they don't interact when they're singing, and it's fascinating stuff.
Yeah. And, like, the sound can travel really far through the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that we've had any evidence of being able to pick it up in space, though.
No, because I, you know, haven't heard it on the top of the water.
Nope.
But one of the really cool things about the Song of the Humpback Whale is in the 70s, when it was originally recorded, they released an album called Song of the Humpback Whale. This was in the early 70s, and that album was, like, this huge, huge smash hit that is the biggest environmental album ever, and was basically the basis of how the Save the Whales movement got started
yeah
in the 70s. And I think it had some of the beginnings of Greenpeace came from that, and a lot of other Save the Whale like, movement the stuff.
Activism stuff came from that. When did, like, the commission, like, the anti-whaling commission
started? That was 1986, so yeah, it was like, the same just after this movie came out.
And, like, the actress who plays Dr. Taylor, she got the part and didn't really know anything about Star Trek, but also decided not to research Star Trek, but instead, you know, researched whales so that she could talk about whales. And now, like, then became, like, a lifelong whale advocate, which I thought was pretty cool.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really pro-whales and pro-whale advocacy.
Yeah, and also, like, the short-sightedness, like, at one point Spock points out, like, that it's not logical to hunt an animal to extinction because then you don't have them available to hunt anymore. And it's like, yep,
true fact. True fact. True fact.
And Dr. Taylor's response was, well, when are humans logical?
Mm-hmm. True fact.
Also, if you learn anything from Star Trek, it's that, well, Vulcans aren't as logical as they want you to think.
Scandal. Did you have any other science-y things to say?
Science-y things to say, yeah. So, well, a couple. So the, not really biology, but I guess, like, animal care stuff. So when they're talking about the, like, giant pieces of plexi or acrylic or whatever that they need to hold large volumes of water, when they talk about them being 6 inches, like, that's small. But I guess in the 80s, they weren't doing the massive sheets.
Yeah, they weren't as much, doing like, as much, so.
Now, like, if you go to a lot of places, they'll have, like, the big curved up over your head, looks tunnels. Like one piece, and, like, tunnels, and, like, no frames and stuff, like, huge. And those can be, like, probably getting close to a foot thick. Like, if you're at an aquarium and you kind of, like, go near this side, and you can, like, see how thick they are, and it's, like, and that's all acrylic. So yeah, like in terms of transparent aluminum, that would have been sweet.
Yes. Yeah, for 100%.
They have figured out how to make something along the lines of transparent aluminum, like just a few years ago, but I don't think it's like production ready.
I don't know. I think we should focus more on beaming.
Yes, I also agree.
That's the technology that we need.
Yeah.
But it applies to some of the transporting of the whales. They get into the ship, they can't move.
Yeah, like there's not a lot of food space
options for them there. Yeah.
But I think they were only in the ship for literally like an hour.
True. That's true.
Yeah.
So
maybe not even
that. I don't know. It's just those are just the things that I see.
I do like if they didn't show it, but I'm hoping that there was an air bubble
for them to breathe in.
Yeah. And also like there would have been a lot of cuz like the Klingon ship is not very high above the water when they beam the body of water and the whales out. And so there would have been, like, a massive, like whoosh.
Yep.
Water that hole filling in, so that would have been interesting.
Also, they were in Alaska, so they should have gotten some other stuff.
Yeah, the water would not have been that clean.
Nope.
It would have been full of other krill and fish and krill and birds. Fish and
basically, the part where the fact that they transport them to Alaska is strange in general.
Yeah.
Because they're in an open pen. In the ocean, they're in a sea pen.
The doors.
In Sausalito.
Yeah.
But anywhere, in the habitat of humpback whales.
Yeah.
And they could have just opened the pen.
Yep.
And then also, she was very, very pregnant.
Yeah.
Apparently.
Rule one of transporting animals is you don't do it when they're pregnant.
And also, you don't transport a very, very pregnant humpback whale to Alaska, which is not where they give birth.
No. So humpbacks, migrate a lot, and the population of humpbacks that are mainly in Alaska and that would have been found through here, we're in Vancouver, and then through California, they migrate between Alaska and Hawaii, and they go to Alaska in the summer to eat all the food, and they go to Hawaii to have all the babies, and then make all the babies.
Baby-making times.
Yeah, so they basically feed up, and they hardly eat anything when they're in Hawaii, and that's where they give birth, and then start making more babies.
Mm-hmm.
And then, tootle on up to Alaska.
Yep. And do lots of eating.
Lots of eating.
And then come back. Mm-hmm. So, excuse me, if a humpback calf had been born in Alaska,
it would have been eaten real fast by some killer whales.
Yep, 100%.
Like, real fast. Yeah. Like, before the hunters got there.
Yep. and then, of course, when it's the 2.5 of them are transported to the 23rd century.
Yeah.
We have no idea what that water's like.
Is the water appropriate for humpbacks? There haven't been humpbacks in Star Trek future, like, probably since, like, the 90s. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so who knows? Like, is there stuff for them to eat? I mean, they have replicators, so they could fix that problem. Except the only cetacean biologist in the future that knows about humpback whales
went to
goes
space.
Off to outer space instead of looking after her whales.
Which was why she wanted to go to the travel future. Into the future 200 years.
Yeah.
To look after the whales she loves so much. That chick.
Yeah. Yeah, she did have a good spacesuit, though, at the end.
That's true. It was a very good spacesuit.
Yeah,
very purpley.
Very good. And, like, she made friends with Sarek in, like, 2 minutes, so good job.
Yeah, why not?
Why not?
Maybe she's going to go to Vulcan and study Vulcan animals.
Yeah, they probably don't have whales, because it's mostly a desert there.
Yeah, but they could have animals. I'm sure they have lizards.
Sure. I have no idea. I don't know much about Vulcan biology, like, other than...
Other than just Vulcans,
the species of Vulcan, but I don't know what else lives there.
It's confusing when the planet and the species are the name the same.
Yeah, they do that all the time in Star Trek
because they're lazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that's another story. Mm-hmm. Anything else about biology issues? I guess like I found a lot of stuff about the Dr. Taylor. Like she drives a crappy beat up truck. Believable. She probably makes like. I don't know.
$4
a day, maybe. The fact that they were able to transport the animals without her knowing about it is baloney.
Yep. Also that she was giving a tour.
Yes.
That also made absolutely no sense.
Maybe, like, for, like, a special event for donors or, like,
yep.
a big, but not just, like, a regular, oh, anybody random can come on this tour? No, the, like, assistant director of the institute.
Whale science?
Yeah. No.
Nope.
No. It was a little bit weird that she called them my whales. But maybe it's just, like, a time thing. Like, I know lots of people who look after animals, and nobody calls them, like,
mine.
No.
They're
like, ours, or, like...
Yeah. The facilities.
Yeah.
They're very protective of them, as you would be, because you're caring for a living thing.
Yeah, and you spend more time with them than you do with your family.
And we will also... There are no humpback whales in captivity.
Mm-mm.
There are no baleen whales in captivity, because it's... I know there's whale sharks in captivity, and they are baleen feeders. But it's incredibly hard and incredibly expensive.
Incredibly expensive. And also they're cold-blooded, so they probably eat way less than whales would.
Whales would.
So
and they eat a ton.
Yeah.
There's a whole lot of
I guess
that issue.
Like, there's not many whales that really have ever been in captivity.
I think there was a gray whale in Japan once.
Yeah, probably.
Didn't go very well.
Like, but not many different species of whales that have, like... Yeah, I mean, obviously these whales weren't really in captivity for very long, although they were as calves, and then she was pregnant.
Yeah. Also, when
that would be
she
like
shows up and realizes that they're gone.
Yeah.
And the water is drained out of the bay.
Yeah.
Which is weird. It's also, it's like 20 feet.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
Yeah, there was some interesting, and like, it wasn't like a drop, like removable floor or anything.
It was just like it's the bay of Monterey, not like the Monterey Bay.
It's the
Monterey Bay Aquarium that's just filled with
just
ocean
and
now,
like, wild sea otters.
Yeah.
So yeah, but in terms of like, if you were in like 1985, let's say when they wrote this movie, like the possibility of humpbacks becoming extinct within like 10 years was like
pretty high.
Yeah, like where we are now. Now there's like. Stupid about the humpbacks, but back then there was like actually none.
There is 80,000
worldwide.
18 to 20,000 in the North Pacific.
Right, and in the early 80s there was like actually none.
Yeah, and like, same like they talk about the blue whale being almost gone, and that's also true.
Mm-hmm.
In the 80s there was hardly any blue whales whatsoever, and they were able to come back with the stopping of whaling as well.
Yeah, and like honestly, and I mean some of this could also be confirmation bias, right? If every time you go near a boat. At all, you die. Your friends die. You're gonna start
not going near boats,
farther away from boats. Which was, well, I guess if they were brought into captivity as calves, they would have been pretty dumb, so they wouldn't have known about boats.
Yeah,
because they're
those
not swimming with any
not
great.
Gonna survive at all.
Well, there's no hunting, and there's
But they don't know how to swim.
Yeah, no, they're not good swimmers because there were so much there were animatronics, so when they're like. Sticking their pectoral fin and like their eye out of the water, and they're like
half
out of the water.
Their body is out of the water, and like tail flukes. Like tail fluking animatronics could not be that difficult. Like it looked real, except for that they were fluking
super high
above their peduncle,
like,
which
the angle was weird.
Yeah, so it was the modeling was really well done.
Yeah.
But it was the actions that were
the problem. Especially once they came above the water. Anytime, like, when the animatronics were underwater, they looked way better than...
Yeah, some of it was, like, and you were saying that people actually thought it was real.
Yeah, like, people watch this movie and I think somebody would, like, try to, like, raise an investigation that they, like, violated laws about how close you could get to the whales when filming.
Yeah.
Like, they're like, yeah, no, it was in a tank on the Paramount lot.
Yeah.
with some 4-foot whales.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they did a pretty good job with that. Well, that probably is about all the
all I really had about the whale stuff.
Yeah. What was your favorite part?
My favorite part is when he says, I'm from Iowa, I only work in outer space. But also all the parts with Scotty, because I love Scotty.
Yeah, my favorite part is when Scotty comes up to the computer at the at the plexiglass slack factory and goes, computer, hello computer. And then McCoy hands him the mouse and he speaks into the mouse like a radio. So cute. And then there be whales here, Captain, is like the best quote of all time.
I also like McCoy in the hospital just like telling just like
giving people this random like, old
lady with kidney failure, like, here, take this pill, you'll be fine.
Or like there's other good moments too. I also really like when in the tour and everybody's watching and you realize that Spock's in the water swimming with the whales and
mind melding,
and then mind melding with the whales.
His ridiculous karate
like his karate headband
behind his eyebrows and his ears.
Classic.
So ridiculous.
Classic. So would you recommend this movie to a biology nerd?
I would.
Yeah.
Definitely to a biology nerd. Yeah. Because it's just, as a biologist, you know how oddly represented biology can be in pop culture, which is why we're doing this podcast in the first place.
Yeah.
So that's, when you look at it in a tongue-in-cheek manner, it's quite a lot of fun.
And actually, I guess, other than bits and pieces, but like her personality as a cetacean biologist, I mostly found pretty believable.
Oh,
fact, like, 100%. She's so dedicated to her
animals.
Super
dedicated.
Like, so passionate about them, like, slaps her boss because he is kind of
because she didn't get to say goodbye
like I found that pretty believable.
Yeah, 100%.
And especially her truck.
Yes, and her truck that didn't work.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Very true. Thanks for joining us this week on Nature Finds a Way. You can subscribe to our podcast by searching for Nature Finds a Way on your favorite podcasting app or service. You can check out our website naturefindsapod.com, and you can find us on social media at Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Nature Finds a Pod. Thanks.
Yeah, and as we mentioned here, the Whaling Hunt Commission.
Yep, that's what it was called.
Yep. Anyway, whaling was stopped in most countries in 1986.
Yes.
It's just how humpbacks and blue whales and many other species were able to come back. But they are facing quite a lot of threats now, still, besides whaling, including plastic pollution, entanglement, chemicals, boat strikes, microbeads,
climate change,
all sorts of fun stuff.
Super exciting things.
If you want to learn more just about whales in general and also what you can do and how you can help, you can go to our other website, whaletales.org, which is whale-tales.org, or find that on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at whaletales.org. We've got lots of great articles about whale science and also stories.
So many pictures
of whales, and also lots of stuff about how you can help.
Yeah.
Every little thing that you do can help. And we can help save these whales so that the 23rd century will be okay.
Indeed. And the alien probe will
hear them.
Well,
they won't even
space.
Come because they'll hear them from their other place.
Yep.
Then everything will be fine.
Exactly.
Hooray!
The end.
Thanks, guys.